It's Friday, ladies and gentlemen. It can only mean one thing. It is the crack, baby. We are back. Crackheads. I mean, you're going to have to get your fill today because we are not going to be around for the next 2 weeks. As you've heard throughout the week, Ariel's been telling you. He's trying to warn you. He's trying to prepare your body for this. This is your last hit of crack for 2 weeks, okay? So enjoy it. Thing is, got a lot to talk about today. Of course, the PFL / MVP merger will be the main topic of conversation today. And we have a lot to get into with that regard. There are still reactions coming out today. Even the great Jake Paul announcing again that he wants to fight Nate Diaz in MMA under the MVP banner. There's a lot of crossover back to the old initial PFL Jake Paul deal, I will say. But don't let that get in the way of the story here. There's a lot to get through. Of course, in case you didn't know, PFL and MVP have merged. By January 2027, it will become MVP. MVP wants to exist across the boxing world and the MMA world. And of course, we saw the big debut event on Netflix with Ronda Rousey beating Gina Carano in a matter of seconds just a few months ago. So obviously, MVP are going to acquire the 200 contracts that are on PFL's roster. There is a lot of very interesting fighters on their roster, of course. Two of which are competing tonight, Usman Nurmagomedov, last fight in his deal, we'll get into that later, and Dakota Dijovic, who is very much the face of the promotion. We are not joined by the beautiful Ben Folks today because he's decided he was going to swan off on vacation. However, we do have the wonderful Chuck Mendenhall, who we will speak to in a matter of seconds before we get a word from our lovely friends. Oh, hello, Chuck. Just wait. You just wait.
Hey, what's up?
You just wait right there, okay?
Jump in here real quick. Okay. No sweat. No. Do your thing. Do your thing. I'll be right here.
Okay. Let's just have a quick word from our friends at Kalshi. That's right. This episode is sponsored by Kalshi, the largest prediction market in the United States. Here's what makes Kalshi different. You are not playing against a house. Kalshi is peer-to-peer trading. You buy yes or no contracts on whether something will happen, and you're trading directly against other users. Think of it like buying or selling a stock. The line isn't set by some algorithm working against you. Public opinion sets the price. Kalshi is CFTC approved, federally regulated, which is why it's available all across the country, including the great states of California and Texas. Download the Kalshi app and use the code CRAIC, that's C-R-A-I-C, to get up to $500 when you trade $25. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade what's next. Just as we have a beautiful Chuck Mendenhall here, now let's have a look at the old markets because it's quite a busy weekend between Serbia and, of course, here's the main event, Medic v. Rodriguez in the main event.
At least you knew it, Pete. At least you knew who the main event was here, all right?
I think we might have a bit of a conversation about that later on. I know what you're talking about, Chuck. 76% of the market going with Medic there against Rodriguez, a man you spoke to ahead of this fight.
I did.
Do you feel that's disrespectful?
No, I think that he's being, this is a tough one, man. This is a tough one coming from, we'll talk about it, but I think this is a very tough fight for D-Rod.
Yeah, it's going to be a very, very good fight. The doctor, of course, you see the boys wearing the scrubs yesterday on the show. Always go the extra mile. I have my scrubs there. It's just that they wore them and I was like, I don't want to steal their idea. So I'm going to keep them back there for a minute. Any more old markets going there, Andy? Blachowicz v. Sterling. Sterling, 74%. Are they sleeping on the legendary Polish power at 25% there, Chuck? You know.
Maybe a little bit, man. But how old is Blachowicz? Like, he's got to be in his 40s.
He's in his
40s, like,
for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Not that it has mattered that much, you know, like if those big lugs like that. But at the same time, it does feel like a passing of the guard a little bit for Sterling. But at the same time, that does seem like they're sleeping on our guy, right?
It could be almost a forgot moment. You know what I mean? The last thing to go from these legendary
Jan must have forgot.
Jan Mustafa, there we go.
There it
and
is.
That's what they pay you.
We were looking for. We were groping for that, but we got it.
Rakic v. Tabura.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That could be a real stinker. I'm just going to say it right now. That'll either be very violent and very quick or an absolute stinker.
They've been involved in some bad ones. But Rakic, I mean, dude, how often has he fought? I mean, this is always the thing with him. Like, he started off so strong at one point and it feels like he's like the Halley's Comet of the UFC at this point. We don't see him too often.
That's right, man. He is like the Halley's Comet of UFC. I remember my fondest memory of him is when he absolutely destroyed Jimmy Manoa in Sweden that time, I believe it was. And everyone was like, everyone wanted to celebrate this win, but it was also so tragic how Jimmy got put out that night that it was one of those weird feelings in the media room afterwards. Like, I don't really know how to approach this.
I remember that well. You were there, right?
I was indeed.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
It was a fun one.
Back in the old days when we used to go around Europe. But of course, we're back. Belgrade. Who's saying it's over? Not me.
No.
Any old markets on the PFL there before we get into their big merger? Usman Nurmagomedov v. Archie Colgan. 84% for Nurmi there. I mean, big, big fight for Nurmagomedov. We can talk about this later, but...
trap fight.
Yeah.
They call it, right?
He's their managed by Ali. Do you think Ali's putting in Archie if at this crucial moment of Usman's career?
This isn't like Ali to be at odds or at a conflict of interest with these guys. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I'm not sure what's happening there, but this is kind of a trap though, man. Isn't it like Usman, you get down to this position where you're like, okay, big time main event, but it's the last fight on your deal, and there's all this talk of UFC and all this stuff. Sometimes that distraction becomes too much.
Yeah, it does. Dakota is a massive 96. Oh, poor Denise Kehals.
To be expected.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lamb to the slaughter, yeah, PT.
Looking forward to it though. But Chuck, before we get into all this, all those beautiful cards that we can talk about towards the back end of the show, the PFL MVP merger. You have wrote about this on Uncrowned, a very beautiful column you've put together as usual. But tell me this, I was saying at the top of the show, like I can't help but think back to, was it 2024, 2023, when PFL announced Jake Paul that he'd be fighting the Francis Ngannou thing?
Right.
Are you feeling a lot of crossover with that? Because as we know, that didn't go quite the way PFL would have wanted, in my opinion.
No, it didn't. But, you know, if you go back and you think about when that was all happening, we were kind of like skeptical too, weren't we? I mean, like some of the things that were going on at that time, they felt, you know, this was still under Don Davis, right? Like there was still a little bit of this overpromise and underdeliver vibe going on with, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. It was kind of pie in the sky. I never really knew if Jake Paul, that really it was just more of an alliance more than anything. It was more of a direction at the time because you're like, okay, well, now they've got some definitive big players and this is how they're going to start to counter the UFC and try to maybe, you know, be the co-leader or whatever whatever their language was. Yeah. So, but obviously like as time went by, it was kind of like one of those stillborn things, right? Like you're wondering what's happening with it. Nothing really materializes. You got one Francis Ngannou fight out of that whole time that he was in, part of that. And there was so much discussion about, you know, him, you know, getting equity with the African side of things and just everything that was going on, being an ambassador and the pay scale. Remember this? It was just so much. But like so many other things we've seen, it just kind of fizzled out. So it just felt like more blowhardism, right? Like it felt like we were just kind of being sold, but as they tried to figure it out and they just couldn't possibly deliver on the product. This feels different in the sense that Jake Paul with Badarian, right? Like they come in a completely different, you know, it's a different feeling, isn't it? Because they've set a precedent, especially Jake Paul going way back against the UFC because, you know, this has been kind of the side crusade of his is to pay fighters, you know, fighter equity. And he's actually curried a lot of favor, not just with fighters, but with fans. And this is the hardest part. The PFL could never really get the fan interest that they wanted, right? Mm-hmm. Like this is a different thing because Jake has done a very good job of focusing and getting like fans to pay attention, at least if you don't like it, whatever. People come out of his fights, like his fight specifically or his cards, sometimes mad or calling for the fix, whatever it is. But people are always talking about it. He's a guy who generates that kind of interest. And I think Badarian, you know, is a guy who understands the UFC side of the business, kind of knows where to counterattack. I feel like it's a fresh coat. It's actually, of all of the things we've seen of companies that come together or want the acquisitions or whatever they're doing, like the different promotions that start up, this one feels a little different to me on that. And that's what kind of prompted that column that I wrote.
I will say, initially when I saw this, I was kind of stuck in the mud in terms of what happened before with PFL. But then, as you said, like this new layer of paint, I think it is a lot of that's to do with how well the MVP debut went on Netflix as well. Like, I mean, of course it had its critics about like the way the main event went. People were saying there are all these squash matches on this card. But we have seen that it has had implications across MMA with Saladin Parnas and Despan being going back to the UFC. Like that has helped them in terms of their career trajectory. The UFC obviously felt like they were doing something well there. But that event in itself, and of course, we have yet to see the full detail of this thing play out. What we're doing right now is speculating to a large extent about what it will be, the media snippets that have come out, what can we kind of forecast based on that. But I do think that proof of concept with the Netflix card mm-hmm. has at least shown like this is something beyond what PFL are capable of. And it's also something that PFL need because, as we were discussing before we went live here, tonight in New York, this is like their best foot going forward with Dakota and Usman, two of the faces of the promotion on the card. And it still isn't provoking much interest outside of the MMA bubble. So the fact that we have seen this MVP Netflix card and God knows what's going to happen in terms of where this will be broadcast when it does become MVP in January 2027. But that does give you some added enthusiasm as to what these guys can do when they are given the wheel of a big promotion.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. Like, just getting the Netflix thing right. Because this, how often does anybody come correct with something that evens the playing field just in one fell swoop? And I feel like the Netflix aspect of this dwarfed in this weird way, like the Paramount Plus thing. Mm. This is a new Paramount Plus broadcast deal with UFC, and they're trying to build that, whereas Netflix is already there, right? Yes. Like, this is like the new flagship of streaming. And to kind of land that deal, and also to bring in Ronda Rousey, to get Gina Carano, to get Nate Diaz, to get Francis Ngannou. So now you have something that's actually like this, the precedent which they started, right? Which was, we're going against the UFC. This was a big subtweet in the end, right? That whole event about the UFC, their numbers and the way they do business. It was a declaration in that sense, like the way that the whole press conference was like that. I think that like laying down that foundation was a big deal. And then to deliver the numbers, even if the fights themselves, if you're like, well, I didn't think they were very great. They weren't, you know, but at the same time, it was compelling enough to tune in. And, you know, it's a promise of big time business and big things to come. And I think that that's kind of the key. When the UFC first rolled out the pay-per-view model, obviously from the very beginning, we got used to the precedent of paying for big fights, right? All the way through up until this year. And the precedent with Jake Paul and like even Bedarian is like, they've already they've kind of shown they can do big business. They've shown they can do novelty business. They've shown they can do, brush off Mike Tyson, 57 years old. They can do all the weird things that they want. But somehow we're meeting them on their playing field. We're meeting them on their level, and we have been. So they have established something of an identity that's very malleable, you know, to how they want to operate through the course of the last few years, and even in the boxing realm, you know, with the big ESPN for women's boxing and everything else going on. I just think that they've set a way. There's way more of a direction and an identity than we are used to with some of these companies.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree with you more. Of course, a big promotional asset to all of this is Jake Paul, and he's been very active on social media. I believe we have some videos of him at the NASDAQ there announcing this deal. And look, the war cry from the jump here, Chuck, is we're going to challenge the UFC. We're coming in to try and take over the fight game. All of this stuff that we have heard before, that is certainly what they attempt to do. I think I can speak for both of us when I think we agree on the fact that UFC is stratospheres beyond anything where the PFL, even with this merger with MVP, even with the Netflix card, what they're doing is stratospheres beyond what any MMA promotion has ever achieved. It is going to be a hell of a task for PFL/MVP, the merger. I don't know what the hell to call it. I'm going to keep on saying that long extended bullshit.
Yeah.
But you'll be happy to know that Oscar Willis of the MacLife got the opinion of one Dana White and all this, and safe to say, doesn't seem to be shaking in his britches just yet, Chuck.
I am happy to know this. Let's see.
MVP and PFL announced a merger yesterday. Curious your reaction to that deal, if you knew it was coming, and what you think that means for the company moving forward.
What company?
MVP.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know anything about what they're doing. It probably makes sense when shit isn't working for anybody. We should all probably get together. Let's take two organizations that don't sell tickets and nobody watches, and let's merge them together and make a bigger company that we won't sell tickets to and that nobody will watch.
They're going to rebut with the Netflix deal. You know that. You know this is coming. They're going to come back with Netflix. But
listen, I said this 100 times, and I'm just fucking around, but I said this 100 times. I don't look at any of those guys as our competition. We're in a whole nother fucking stratosphere now. I mean, I'm competing with all the majors. Those guys aren't my competition. So good luck to them all. I wish them all the best.
You need one of those high-powered telescopes to see the UFC at this point, man. If you really want to zero in on them, you know, that's where they're at.
That power slap cope, man, that is doing some serious fucking miles these days. That plastic power slap cope, my God. I tend to believe what he's saying, though. I don't think he is intimidated in any way.
He's always been right. He's always been right about this, by the way.
Yes.
Unfortunately, it's true. Yeah.
I don't really think he gives a shit at all, to be honest. I think they need to poke the bear. And that is what me and Chuck are going to do our best to talk about today in terms of what can this merger bring about? What needs to happen? What didn't happen the first time around Jake Paul got involved with PFL? And I guess top of the order, really, in terms of things that need to happen and give us an idea of how enthusiastic we can be about this merger is a broadcast deal, right, Chuck? Like, this is this has been a looming problem for PFL for a long time. ESPN, the placement, John Martin, who will continue as CEO of MVP when this merger goes all the way through in January 2027, he's come out and said, like, you know, we haven't been given very good spots by ESPN. We know that MVP have worked with Netflix in the past. Do you think that's on the table? Not in terms of every single event, but for certain showcase events, maybe like 3-4 times a year, do you think that's something that they'll be able to compel Netflix to get into?
I think so, man, because, you know, Netflix, they want live coverage of events, right? Like, they want to do this. This is how you stay, you know, at the top of the game. And I think that that was a good number that they did on the first one. I think that it was, you know, even if I know what Dana's saying, everything he's saying there is right. It's very difficult. Like, you're not moving ticket. Like, these companies come, they go, they merge, they fall apart, you know, and it's like, you can understand that there's a brush off. I'm not saying that he's not paying attention to this. He fully knows what's going on with this, but especially with the Netflix thing, I think that if they're able to work out something with Netflix, it remains to be seen, like, you know, will they do kind of what they did here, where it's you know, you're doing maybe a quarterly big show that basically, because this is what we speculated before, we're like, I think that they just want to kind of drown the UFC's numbers. They want to beat them in numbers, if nothing else. This is a different approach if you have a Netflix at your disposal, right? Like, if you're in partnership with Netflix. So I have to think that that's part of it, right? And it feels like they have a good relationship with Netflix. So I would guess that that's got to be one of the forerunners for this whole thing. We'll see how it all plays out, but I think that when we're determining, and this is why we're speculating, when we're determining the success, I think that that's going to factor in huge, right?
Yeah.
It's got to be, if it's something like Netflix, that changes things immediately. It makes them a player immediately, all of that stuff.
Agree, and I do think it kind of reminds me of the discussions we were having about UFC before the Paramount deal went through. Like, I could see different pieces of this going in different directions, because I just plainly don't think that the roster is compelling enough to become like every event goes on Netflix, right? Like, the fight nights that PFL have had over the last few months have evidenced this. Like, we were talking about the promotion potentially being its death throes. Of course, this shoves a whole lot of new excitement around it and stuff, but I just can't imagine Netflix being in the business of putting on PFL standard events that we see today. That said, yeah, I could imagine a lot of people being suddenly, like, reigniting their interest in terms of having this product, MVP MMA, on their broadcast. Like, DAZN, who has kind of been combating itself against the Zuffa boxing world, I know PFL have been on DAZN in the past, the added impetus of having Jake Paul there promoting these cards, I think that will mean something to them in terms of getting more eyeballs on MMA outside of the UFC, the likes of DAZN.
It's nice when you can be the promoter and the owner and the founder or whatever, and also kind of like the key fighter. Like, he just keeps like, he's the dangling carrot. Yeah, eventually, I you know, I'm going to fight in MMA, which, you know, that people will tune in for. It's a very unique setup. I just think that, you know, you have a guy who has a brand that we talked, at first I thought like he was a clown show, like, you know, like same. He shows up, he's a interloper in the fight game. It did not feel like he belonged here, but he's been able to just keep carving out this thing. And now he's got a bit of an identity. And I think that there are a lot of people, because he has preached fighter equality and fighter fairness and these types of things, and his fighters themselves are like, hey, we're making a lot more here. I just think that these elements play. I mean, who knows if it's sustainable unless you have a big broad, you know, how's it all plays out. But it's a very different approach. And that is, in 2026, it's just so different for Jake Paul, right? And he's got the right guys around him. And he's proven himself over the course of time. So I just think that it is compelling, isn't it? I mean, like, generally speaking, when you're talking about Bjorn Rebney, for instance, or, you know, Don Davis, you get these guys who you're like, you hear them, the first time you hear them making declarations of what they want to do, and you're like, dude, you just don't, like, how could you be this naive going into the game, you know? And we've seen that a lot. This approach to it is very different.
Yeah.
It's very serious, very different. And I think that they're shrewd enough to kind of know where they can compete with the UFC. And I think that that's very different too.
Yeah. And he stokes a different flame in Dana, like, because Dana has so publicly gone against Jake Paul in the past. He's also like, they're aware that this is a dick measuring competition between Jake Paul and Dana White, and has been for a long time. But with that, there's an added level of pride and this added level of ego where you think Jake and Nikisa, working in the MMA for such a long time, has proven himself to be a great promoter. But in terms of the public spat between Jake and Dana, I think that lights the flame under both of them, particularly Jake in this case, because obviously he's at the forefront of this merger. But I do believe that kind of puts his feet to the flames to a certain degree, where people are going to be saying, like, you said you were going to do this. He's already gone through this once with PFL pretty much, which I think will provide an impetus for him to deliver.
Yeah. Dude, it's such a compelling thing, isn't it? It's all of it is very compelling in the sense, like, you know, when they were first doing it, when they first were putting out the MVP MMA card, your feeling is they're just doing a one-off. At least this was my mind. I was like, they want to beat numbers. I don't think they want to have a roster. Remember we talked about this? You're like, I don't think that they want to roster up, because that changes everything. This becomes now a league that you're trying to manage. You have to put on lots of... The fact that they did this is a little surprising, because they were saying that it's not going to be a one-off, but I wasn't sure that they would go so far as to do something like this. And I guess that's where my big intrigue falls into next. I don't know. How many fighters does PFL 200, have on roster?
Approximately 200. Yeah.
So, like, you think about that, and to keep 200 fighters happy and to, like, have them fighting, you got to have some events. And this, again, maybe this is where they're in the, like, figuring this thing out, but... just doing that basic math, you're like, that gives you a little bit of a hint of what they're thinking, right? Like, they have to put on, maybe this is one of those things where it's kind of multiple deals and they're airing in different places. It might be something like that. But, you know, it's a fully different thing. And it's hard to get, like, this is where it's different for Jake Paul. He's been operating in kind of the, what do they call it? The tent pole type things.
Yes.
We're focused on this one event. And now you're going to have to focus on a horizon where there's a lot of things going on.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, when Dana's like downplaying and stuff, I think he's always talking about that. Do you have a big picture that's sustainable for your company? And that's going to be the fun once this thing gets going for real.
Yeah. We've talked about the broadcast deal. I think that's the most important thing. Second is just how this looks, the rebrand, because, I mean, we've talked about it for the last couple, I think for the last month or so, it's kind of come crashing down that something needs to happen.
You don't think they're going to go with your original name? You had a name that you wanted to call this. What was it again?
Knockout PFL's World.
Rebrand.
Knockout World.
What was it?
Knockout
World. Yeah. I still like that.
I've copywritten it, so hopefully they go for it and we could all be in for a few quid. You know what I mean? That is still the hope here.
That'd be nice.
It would be really, I could use nice the money. I could do. The PFL's just gone stale, dude. Like, even, like, we talked about it with like, even about your son, like, his interest in MMA, Blaze, he's very interested in the UFC. He knows the ins and outs of this promotion, like, and then no interest at all, really, in the PFL, or, you know, very rare have any. And I was getting phone calls off coaches for the last number of weeks, like, tuning in to watch the PFL product, and just, like, saying, it's just not inviting looking. It looks stale. Like, it feels like they're going through the motions to a certain degree, and in this time that we perceive to be so important. Of course, that's been solved now with the merger, but it it needs to look good. And as much as like the Netflix MVP card looked so, so good, and it was, I know people are complaining about the lights and the seats at the arena and all that.
Yeah, but that's just the arena, right? Like, yeah. It's just how it looks.
But can they actually do this on a smaller scale? Like, as we're saying, they're not going to have these Netflix kind of events every couple of weeks to fulfill the needs of this 200-strong roster. Do you think they've shown you enough in their boxing enterprises, like the likes of of Jake's early fights? Remember, he went off the map and start being a proper boxer for a while, stop messing around with those MMA guys.
And he stopped that real quick because he realized nobody was paying attention.
But to his credit, the events look good though, right? Like they look decent. Like in terms of a broadcast, like it wasn't like you turn it on and go, oh, fuck this, turn it off. Of course, there was some robots dancing around and stuff like that. You'd have to look past that. But do you believe Nikisa, Jake and John, of course, from PFL, do you think they could have the combined talents to put on intriguing, good-looking, and appetizing smaller MMA cards as opposed to those gargantuan one they've already done with Netflix?
I think that's the hardest task they're going to have.
Yeah.
You know, I really think that's the hard part, is just to have, you know, kind of your filler shows or however you want to look, the smaller shows, and just saying like, hey, you guys should watch this one. Like, that is the hardest thing for all of these. Like, how many Bellators went through that you didn't even, like, you're like, oh shit, there was a Bellator last night? How many of those went through? And like, even Strikeforce back in the day had a better job, right? Like, you kind of knew, but they would have events come and go that virtually nobody paid attention to. I think that is the key. And this is where the UFC's stronghold is, you know, it's at its best, is that they have, what, 46 events a year, and they've carved this out. We don't pay attention to some of the apex things as like we would, like the bigger fight nights, and then, of course, the pay-per-views or whatever, the numbered cards. But to add to that space that's already so inundated every, like, almost every weekend throughout the year, to add to that space, you've got to do something that's going to be compelling. And you got to be able to build, I guess, kind of almost like a soap-like, like the UFC did, like where you pay attention to the fighters and you're interested in who they're fighting, what the dangling carrots are behind that fight, like who's fighting who after that. Those things, that's so hard to do, man. Yeah. And other promotions have had a very, very difficult time doing it. And those small shows just kind of come and go with nobody paying attention. So I feel like that, again, this is just one of those things. You're like, how will they handle that? That is a great question. And you know, how will they add the magnitude or match the magnitude of what the UFC has created?
Yeah. As we've touched on a few times here, PFL have great fighters. There's no doubt about it. But the way it's going right now, something needs to be added to this. Like, obviously, that's why MVP are here. We've gone through the broadcast deal. We've talked about the rebrand, just making this look like an appetizing product. The next step is getting fighters that people are compelled to watch.
Right.
They do have those, don't get me wrong. We've mentioned Usman, Dakota, both of whom are fighting tonight in New York. They've also got Doumbé, who's been away for a while. I wonder if MVP can tickle his balls a bit and get him back in action, because a lot of people want to see this guy fighting.
All tickling, baby. Yeah,
it's the best way to do anything, really. You know, if you're trying to compel someone out, just give it a little, just get the dangleberry, you know. Also, Patrick.
You're too expert at that. I don't know what's going on, but yes.
Look, give it a go tonight and get back. All right. Patrick Habarora from Belgium. He's another astronomical talent who is creating huge scenes over there. They can do something with him. He could be a headliner of one of these smaller shows. He has been a headliner for them in France, in Belgium. Even at his debut that I was at, crazy, crazy scene. They've also got Paul Hughes in Belfast. We've said this a number of times. The stuff they do outside the US is far more intriguing, and it looks so much more energetic than the stuff they do in the US. As I mentioned, Hughes in Belfast, you have Caelan Lochran there as well, Reese McKee there as well. Manchester, I think that's an untapped resource. Yeah. Lewis McGrillen is coming off a loss, but he can sell a shitload of tickets in Manchester. Dakota, obviously being from Manchester as well, I think that's a serious option. But do you imagine that a lot of this will play out outside of the US, or do you think MVPs
will? You know what? I keep thinking about this. I'm like, did they? Because you're right. They've had, like, their better stars have kind of been the European, like, the, you know, we keep seeing, like, you were talking about Cedric Doumbé. You went out to that fight in Paris, and you're like, oh my God, dude, this is like Dublin when McGregor was there. You know, it's like, it's a crazy scene. And, you know, the UFC obviously just kind of pilfered one of the guys who's going to go and then and fight in that market. But, you know, one intriguing aspect is in our world today, you know, in our world today, because it's changed so much just since the UFC like got a stronghold. If you were to say like, okay, who's better at holding up and saying, pay attention to me, pay attention to me in this game right now, Jake Paul on the one side or Dana White on the other. You're almost like, dude, the biggest thing they have is you have a relevant player who can command attention, whereas another guy is just like coasting right now. Like, I don't even know what Dana's doing most days.
He's on autopilot, you know, right?
He's on autopilot, dude. And then, like, if he doesn't sense that, like, that shift in, you know, dynamic a little bit, this is why they'll start to fail. This is why they'll get caught up. This is why they'll get caught up too, because somebody will say like, hey man, in a game of attention, we're just stealing attention. We know how to do it, you know? And I honestly, that's, you know, you look at guys like Scott Coker and Bjorn and all the, you know, name any of these guys. Could they do this effectively? Well, this is the one thing that Jake Paul has done very well. Yes. And I think that that is like almost a subplot to this whole thing is like, can he just attract attention, headlines, all that stuff over to him, you know? And I think in our world today, man, the way it goes, you know what I mean? Like, that doesn't seem impossible to me. It's a different game than it was a few years ago, you know? So that is something to keep in mind on this.
Well, you talk about headline generation. Jake Paul's been doing the rounds. And guess what?
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to let Jake Paul tell you. Let's see.
We decided to team up with PFL to really go and change the landscape and give fighters the opportunity to have the viewership and the big paydays and to go ahead and compete with the UFC head to head.
You said you were looking forward to your MMA debut. What's your timetable for that?
I've been trying to make it happen for a long time, and it's really just come down to negotiations behind the scenes. I'm going to come back hopefully later this year into boxing and then looking to do MMA in 2027. So there's still a long list of opponents out there that I want to fight, massive names. I'm only developing my skill. I'm 29 years old. There's still a long way for me to go on the path to world champion, and that's what I want to be able to do and accomplish.
Jake, how does training for MMA compare to training for boxing?
I don't know. That's the funny part is I've never even done a single day of MMA training. I have a wrestling background. I grew up Division I Ohio wrestling in high school, but I've never actually said, hey, today we're training MMA. So I'd imagine it's very similar to boxing.
You know, well, made some good points there. He doesn't know how hard an MMA camp is. He's going to be fighting MMA next year. It feels like deja vu. Feels like deja vu. But
he's a perpetual dangling carrot. He's not going to. I don't know if he will. This remains to be seen for me.
But he is.
Although he backs up most of his stuff. So I will say that like there's a possibility he does this.
And that would work for them. Like in terms of this attention economy that you're talking about, that works. Like you put him on if he does this on Netflix against Diaz, which he said today, we couldn't use the clip, but he said today that he wants to call out Diaz. This is, again, old hat for some. And as much as it would piss off a lot of diehard, hardcore MMA fans to admit this, him headlining a card would bring them potentially to Netflix, which gives them a massive card to sell and an opportunity to put a load of, like at least some of these fighters on the 200 strong roster into the public eye in a way that they never have been before. Like that works in terms of one of those big banner events, right? If Paul is going to make an MMA debut.
Yes, because it's the next step further, right? Like so we were like, it's been an escalation the whole way, like the improbability of what he's doing. Well, he's going against Ben Askren. Oh, of course, because Ben's a wrestler. He's going against Tyrone Woodley. Oh, well, you know, this, all the way through, right? Like Tommy Fury, he goes all the way, but he won't fight, you know, he'll fight these guys who are pretty good boxers in MMA, but he won't fight real boxers. So then he fights Joshua, right? Who breaks his jaw. You think that's the end of it. Well, how do you go from there? Yeah. Well, now I'm going to go into MMA. I mean, he's a master at like going up levels or like changing the levels, you know, to keep you interested. And obviously like with a guy like Nate Diaz, it's hard to kind of matchmake him at this point, like especially after watching the Mike Perry beatdown. But I think that you put something like that because they've already done it once in a forgettable one way. Now you're going into the other guy's realm. I think that that's compelling, right? This is what we're talking about when we talk about people who want to just tune in to watch this stuff. It's like, this is what we're talking about. So I could see that happening. I know I just said like, we'll see if that happens, but actually in just the way his trajectory has been, I feel like it does happen, you know?
I don't think he...
I feel like it does happen. I think that that's how Jake operates. He just kind of, he gives you the next thing.
Yeah.
You know, he just keeps following that progression.
Yeah, and I don't think he's invested in this as he is boxing in terms of his professional career. And yeah. I don't think it would hurt him. Joe, you know, I don't, like, if he lost an Nate Diaz, people are like, yeah, of course he lost an Nate Diaz. You know what right. I mean? Like, it's not the blow. But I'll tell you what, Chuck, that isn't the only potential headline that we've been discussing. John Martin's been having a word too. Remember Cyborg? Yeah, still contracted there, apparently. Let's have a listen to what he had to
say. I remember the big Jan Finney fight from back in the day. Remember that
Who
one?
Could
that
forget? Good. Who could forget the Jan?
I wouldn't have even thought to ask this, but like I said, I put out a tweet. Hey, guys, let me know what you got for John Martin. I'll be talking to him later. Chris Cyborg tweeted at me. She said, make sure you ask John Martin about Chris Cyborg and Ronda Rousey. Is this possible? Or are you interested?
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm first of all, I'm focused on Chris Cyborg fighting at Tampa.
Yes.
But what Chris Cyborg wants to do, we'll try to put together. But so I'm smiling. I don't know. We'd have to check. I was talking a little bit earlier to Jake and Nikisa about Ronda and what her aspirations are. We'll have to figure all that out. But again, if it's good for the fans.
It works. It would work. Shit. It would work. Do you not think it would do it like a Netflix job and that if Rousey comes back again or if they jump the shark with that?
I mean, dude, it would do gangbusters. But do you really think Ronda's coming back? Does this count as one of the babies she wants to have? Because I'm like, this is like, first of all, just at odds with, it's at odds with everything she said. Plus, I don't really think that she's ever once, from maybe the time when she was first being introduced to the UFC, was there really a talk of doing Cyborg where it was actually anything that was legit, you know? I don't think she wants anything to do with Cyborg. Her whole career. And also, you just came back and got a 17-second, like, cherry on top to the, and an extra payday and a sayonara and all that. For her to come back and, like, risk all that against Cyborg, dude. I mean, that's why it would be compelling theater, though. Yeah. Because you'd be like, whoa, so Ronda's putting herself into a dangerous position here to, like, blow it again? Like, it's just, I feel like that would be the subplot of this whole thing, but... I cannot see that she would come back and do this at all, man.
Yeah, it is. It is hard to believe, to be fair. And to your point, even when Cyborg went to the UFC and she was literally killing herself to make 135. Remember, there was that big stipulation at the start, and there was the videos of her nearly boiling herself to get down to 135. Obviously, Rousey's at 145 now, Chuck. I'm just saying, it's, you know, changes the goalpost somewhat. But
I don't even know if they could come up with the amount of money that would even tempt her. I'm not even joking. Like, how would you even tempt her into this fight? I know Cyborg would take it in a heartbeat, but
Netflix is
budget. I can't imagine.
Like, you feel like they could just do something, though. I don't know, but
they're gonna have to come correct. I just don't know, man.
Another one on the rumor mill. We don't have any media snippet of this or whatever. Just in terms of main events they could potentially look to put on that provoke a lot of interest. Francis Ngannou v. Rico Verhoeven. Obviously, Rico coming off the Usyk fight, he's a sympathetic victor, really. Like, everyone's like, you were robbed. Francis, of course, had a comeback on the MVP card, destroyed Philip Lenz as expected. Is that the kind of thing that they should be trying to do? Like, they have Francis at play, you'd imagine, because of his previous with MVP. Rico's right there as well. And this is something that was talked about ahead of Rico signing on for Usyk. I think that one feels like it could be right there again if they come correct.
No, we're talking about an MMA, right? That's what we're saying.
Oh yeah, we have to.
Because I agree. I think that's where the compelling, that's the more compelling thing. Even though Verhoeven had, like, he looked very good, obviously, against Usyk. But I think that if they put this into, you know, Rico has, he has talked about this a lot where he's like, you know, I'd love to do this. I would love to do MMA or whatever. And like, you put him in a position where he's fighting a guy a couple years older than him, like 39 to 37, right? Like, I think that that's hugely compelling.
Yeah.
And they're both in good spots where their value is still very high. They're still kind of must-watch. Like, I think Rico now is more, in the United States at least, is more must-watch TV than he was previous to that boxing thing. People knew who he was, especially diehards who follow combat sports, but the casual fan out here doesn't know who Rico is, you know? So I think that that's one of those things that his stock went up with this Usyk match and, you know, I think if you're going to do something like that, strike while the iron is hot.
I've got a couple more of just I've written down here. We mentioned at the top, this is the last fight on Usman Nurmagomedov's contract. A lot of people might not know Usman, his ability, he's a fantastic fighter, very well-rounded, great striking, brilliant wrestler, obviously. Two brilliant fights with Paul Hughes, very, very close fights, but he remains atop the ladder at 155 with PFL, soon to be MVP. I'll tell you what is important about this guy. He is not a figure like Islam Makhachev, and he's not a figure like Khabib Nurmagomedov in terms of just this massive, massive amorphous following that we haven't seen before. But what he is important for is the business of PFL. You remember they had that Dubai fight series. I think they changed the name on it a couple of times. The two of his Hughes fights happened in Dubai as part of this Dubai fight series, I believe it was called. But there was a massive amount of money generated for PFL for the side fees for this guy to come, because it was a massive event in Dubai. You're in the Muslim world. This guy has a huge draw there, obviously. And it's easy to travel to. Like, he had a perfect foe in Paul Hughes, where it's only a simple flight across for Irish people as well. And they're filling up these places, the Coca-Cola Arena, I believe it is, to watch this guy fight. The reason why that gives me pause in terms of PFL being able to get him to sign the dotted line is, this is the UFC's business model too now, Chuck. Like, side fees are massively important to them. As we know, they've been in partnership with Abu Dhabi for a very, very long time. Islam Makhachev might not have a lot of fights left. Obviously, they already have members of the Nurmagomedov family outside of Islam on their books, but Usman is a proven seller in that world. In a different location in the Middle East too. It's Dubai, not Abu Dhabi. A short drive away, don't get me wrong. But he fulfills things from a business point of view for the UFC as well as PFL, which makes me think they're going to come very correct in terms of getting him when he becomes a free agent after tonight's fight against Colgan.
You're saying that the UFC will come correct?
As integral to the business operations of PFL, he will also help the UFC a lot by becoming a member of their roster, right?
It's very interesting because I just saw like a release as we were taping this, basically that Jake Paul and Bedarian will be on Long Island tonight, right? Like to watch this fight. And I'm, you know, business starts now, right? Like this thing is done. So now business is going. Like they've got to be thinking now of all the things that you're outlining. Like, you know, guys who have that kind of value, I'm not sure you want to just let them slip away. You know what I mean? Like that would be priority number one, honestly. If I'm them, like right off the bat, you want to keep a guy that that has that kind of intrigue and, you know, that you know you could do a better job, I guess,
yes,
of making a name. And I feel like that's a good one. We'll see how it all rolls out tonight. But yeah, somebody's going to have to come correct. And I'm not even sure. Sometimes when this happens, this is like one of those things, if somebody's actually pushing now the UFC, if they really feel it, it's not going to come through Dana's mouth. It's going to come through the actions of signing a guy like this. They want to steal him away. I've been traveling, but when they just got Parnes, when they just signed him, did they already know, like, did Ariel talk about this at all? Like, did they already know that he, you know, that it was going to be a merger? Like, was this already in play, or did his team just say, like, we got an offer from the UFC? Like, I was curious about that.
I'm very intrigued.
Because that's a similar situation, right?
And I'm very intrigued. Like, do we use this as a mark against PFL in terms of MVP in terms of negotiations, given that Saladin had a brilliant performance on that card, and he felt like one of the big stories coming away from it. He appeared on the Ariel Helwani show earlier this week along with his manager, Stefan Ach, who is a pioneer of French MMA and has handled...
Oh, yeah, of course.
He's handled Saladin so well, like unbelievably well. I think he might be one of the best managed fighters of all time, honestly, considering the deals that were floating about, the reports of the deals. But he did mention, like, MVP, all the best. We had discussions with them. That for me says, like, is that the first L for them? Like, if he's gone, and he obviously proved himself to be this massive draw and this unbelievable icon in France. And
yeah, exactly the same way you're saying about Usman, right? Like, it's just like he's got a market, site fees, all that. I mean, it makes sense for them to sign.
Yeah, I don't know if we can count that as an L against them for not getting him to commit his future, because that guy will sign the deal that's right for him as a professional. He is a prize fighter, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like, he has turned down the UFC before. He has turned down the PFL before. He signed massive money with KSW. Right. And then he reaches this free agency period and UFC get him. I don't know. We might find out about that later on when people are talking more directly. But I've got one more for you, Chuck.
Okay.
Conor McGregor. He has one fight left on his UFC deal. Obviously, it went terribly the last time when we were all in Vegas. It did not look good for him. But is he not the archetypal example of exactly what they need? Just a guy who will demand the eyeballs of the world, a guy that Netflix will put their weight behind 100%.
Oh, man. It's so tough because yes and no. Because it's like, well, you get a guy like, obviously, like everybody's going to pay attention to Conor. But dude, how long can you do it? Like, how long can you like keep putting together that guy who you just kind of find and you're like, okay, we'll be compelled at the tail end of something like for it to tune in. It's just, it's not sustainable in a long-term sense. But if you're talking about initially, I guess, I think that that's probably going to be, if they're trying to segue into like building this thing, it's not going to hurt them obviously to have something like that. Like you get Conor McGregor, and of course, a lot has to be seen here. How he comes back at like 39 years old. If he actually does come back on International Fight Week next year, what does that look like? Like, dude, are we looking at such a shop-worn guy at that point that you're like, you know, everybody loses interest? You know what I mean? Like, that's a real thing. I mean, it's like you got to really pay attention to this. But at the same time, like, if he's viable at all and he's able to hit the free agency and he's able to go over there, it's always going to be a good thing. I just think that sustainability of what they want to do, because this is the whole thing that is different, right? Like, the one-offs are one thing. You can kind of put everything into one, eggs into one basket, see how it goes, and then take the basket and then do it again. You know, like you can just kind of keep doing this. But now they're going to have to look at big picture on how to build a league. And that's like, I'm not sure that you can sustain it with, you know, just getting the like a big guy at the tail end of his career and paying him lots of money. You know what I mean? For each time, there's not enough of those guys out there.
Yeah, I'm thinking about more in terms of like, I think they'll be far more malleable negotiators than the UFC would be for Conor. I think they'd let him do a one-fight deal. They could do the trilogy, the Diaz trilogy there. And I know like...
Yes, for sure, dude. They'll do that. I think that because that's the precedent they set, right? They set a precedent for kind of giving you resolution on some of these, like the Carano-Rousey thing was like, dude, we've been waiting for, you know, decade and a half for this thing to happen. Obviously, that's it's just hyperbole. But like at the same time, you're like, well, you know, it would have been fun to watch them back in the day. You're resolving something that's long been in the fight game's imagination. And that's certainly going to happen. I guarantee it, man.
Yeah. Well, a lot remains to be seen. We do not know what the hell this is going to look like by the time January 2027 comes around.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about the PFL's event just in a few minutes. But before that...
By the way, Pete, did you notice real quick that there's something called Strike MMA right now. It's another one.
You did reference this in your piece, I noticed.
I did reference it.
Please, go ahead.
I called it the Ross Perot of the farm party of this three-man race. I'm just throwing it out there. That's why it's that's another layer, though, isn't it? Like Scott Coker getting back in the game. This is a guy who I'm not sure what their plan is.
Yeah.
Like, I talked to Rich Chow and it was sort of like, well, we're figuring that out. So that's just something else that adds a dimension to this whole thing that's happening in 2027.
I'll tell you my fear for Strike is, which is the title they're going under at the moment, is.
Right.
I just feel like they're going to try and do the same thing that they did already again. And there was evidence of this with the cabinet, right? I got so many fucking messages about this from European coaches and managers when he took the picture with Kavanaugh, because you remember what Bellator became? Inevitably, it was like 18 SBG fighters against like other guys we hadn't really heard
of,
you know?
Of course.
That's what it kind of devolved to at a certain stage. And they're kind of like, if Scott Coker and Rich Chow are taking pictures with John Kavanaugh, does that suggest that this is once again going to happen? Like, this is the product they're going to be bringing back.
Could be, dude. We'll see.
You know? I think...
That would be strike one.
Come on, mate. Fucking hell, that's it all. Unbelievable. But we do have some rather depressingly familiar news to discuss with... Anthony Smith, earlier in this week, we found out that he had been booked at Sarpy County Jail on 3 potentially felony charges for terrorist threats, first degree false imprisonment, and first degree domestic assault. On Wednesday, the Sarpy County District Attorney's issued a statement alleging that Smith was involved in an altercation with his wife at a bar in Greta, Nebraska, during which he reportedly threatened to kill her if she did not get into his vehicle and go home with him. And this I am reading from Uncrowned at the moment. The statement further alleged that Smith eventually forced his wife into a vehicle and then, quote, attempted multiple times to use the vehicle to strike her, unquote, after she escaped during the drive. Per authorities, Smith's wife ultimately avoided any physical harm and Smith turned himself into authorities without incident following the issuing of a warrant. Obviously, there is no charges been brought against Anthony yet. He has not been found guilty of anything as of yet. But unfortunately, just another story that we've become very familiar with, Chuck, in the post-fight careers of people who have given a lot to the game. I heard Luke Thomas speaking about it earlier in the week, and he was referencing the fact that Smith has fought over 60 times. You know, like that is a lot of miles on the clock, and obviously various very, very serious crimes he has been accused of here, and we have to wait for the legal aspect of this to play out. But what was your reaction to hearing this news of Smith?
Well, kind of disbelief. I mean, I'm fully aware. I've talked to Anthony many times, just like Luke. I'm sure you've talked to him. Like, he's a guy who has been around. He was forever in the fight game before he even got to the UFC. But also one of the good guys. You know what I mean? This is one of the guys, like, if anything happened, it was usually to him. Like, remember the home invasion thing that was going on, and he had to ward off, like, that type of thing. But he's always been one of the good guys, and obviously he's got a pretty cool gig with the UFC still, in very good standing. So when you hear something like this, you're like, wow, man. Of the people that snap or have something going on, I didn't anticipate that. He's also very well-spoken.
Incredible.
Like, he's a guy who's very articulate, and he's very bright.
Seems sensitive as well, you know, like when
you're... So, yes, exactly. Yeah. Like, and he's always communicated the intricacies of the fight game from a mental and physical, like, he's been able to do that very well for his audience. And I guess that all of that combined, man, made this a really, like, you know, harrowing thing. And I think on the, the heels of the Dustin Poirier thing, like, that happened a few weeks ago, and you start to think about what's the common thread here. Well, these are guys who are fresh out of the fight game. They're fresh out of, like, competition, and you're not sure to what extent that burden, you know, like, hits them, like, this existential thing that hits them. And then the common thing is for people to then say, like, is it something that is this a bad thing for his brain? Is it like, is he not thinking right? And it's hard to know, man. I mean, evidence would say, like, you look at, like, the Leon Spinks, of, you know what I mean? Like, you look at just boxers of yore, Ollie, of course, Hearns, like, just guys that were in there in a lot of wars, man, and how they kind of ended up. We haven't, in MMA, we haven't had people grow old enough yet to really see everything. Like, in boxing, you could see that over generations, like the guys who were affected by this. We don't know that, but it's kind of heartbreaking, man, because I really love Anthony, and this is just, it seems so out of character. But then you're like, well, maybe we just don't know what's happening with him.
Yeah,
you know, and that's hard to know, that's hard to stomach as well, man.
Yeah, it happens a lot, let's be honest. Like, see what's happened with BJ Penn as well. Like, it is horrific to see this kind of stuff happening, to hear these reports. Obviously, we're going to keep you guys posted on everything, every juncture of this that is reported. We will let you know about that. But an all too common story, really, as far as I'm concerned.
And, yeah.
You know.
Do we have that, the Kenny Florian?
Yes.
That was a good, that the Kenny Florian thing is actually, this is really good. I can't read it because that's too small, but maybe you can see it. But it's very good.
Yeah. This is what,
at least the highlights.
This is what K-Flow had to say. No, I'll read it in full because I think it is really prevalent, as you say. Here's what Kenny Florian posted about it. People often make the short-sighted argument that because a fighter can still compete at a high level and still make good money, they should keep fighting. But I wonder how many more out-of-the-cage incidents involving current and former fighters we need to see before we start asking a different question. How many fights is too many? What's long-term brain health worth? Is an extra $1 million worth losing the ability to think, remember, or function normally? Is $3 million worth drinking filet mignon through a straw in your 60s or 70s because you can no longer swallow? Is $5 million worth risking your family and your relationship? Is $10 million worth ending up homeless, incarcerated, or unable to recognize the people in your life? People need to remember that the decision to retire isn't just about what you can still do today. It's also about protecting the person you'll have to live with for the rest of your life. Ironically, the mindset required to succeed in one of the toughest and most physically damaging sports on the planet, the relentless drive to push forward, ignore pain, and believe you're the exception is often the very thing that makes it hardest to recognize when it's time to stop and think long term. I mean, that is perfectly put by K-Flow, really, isn't it?
100%. And I mean, this is a conversation that the boxing realm has had for a long time. They've tried to reconcile. And then, like, you look at pro football in America here too. I mean, it's just something that is, that people, you know, it's taken a long time for people to take it seriously and to look at it. But like, you see a lot of guys these days, and I mean, we had like Luke Kuechly, for instance, was a very big linebacker for the Carolina Panthers, retired fairly young. Like, he was still kind of operating on a very high level.
Andrew Luck as well,
but right? Dude, what's that?
Andrew Luck as well. Wasn't he one of these guys that retired?
Yeah, I mean, and he's a quarterback. Like, you know, but you get these guys, and I think that, like, I remember Kuechly, he had some concussions and he walks away, and you think like, dude, I mean, it is hard, as much as you want as a fan to be like, man, you've got years left, what are you doing? He kind of understood the big picture on that. And I think that, that is something you have to look at these days. Like, you have to look at your own like history of what's been happening to you, like your concussion history and all of that, and be like, dude, how much is worth it? Because who wants to live that life as you get older? You know, that's not sustainable. And especially, it's not like there's a, you know, it's not like the UFC is going to take care of you. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, if you get to those stages, they may on some level, but like not in the sense like you would hope, you know? So all of those things really should be considered. And I know that in the fight game and like, you know, like it's everything. It's the hoopla, it's the money, it's the fame, it's the relevancy, like it's all of that stuff. And that's a lot to walk away from if you're still considered anywhere near your prime, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so, but it is something. I think that's why Ken Flo hits a good point there.
And look, I'm a hypocrite. I'm talking out both sides of my mouth because I'm moments ago being like,
we all are.
Connor and Nate on MVP, huh? That would be fucking, you know what I mean?
True.
It's just something that is inescapable. It's always, the fight game is.
Remember TJ Grant? Like, he just kind of, and I mean, he had a scary thing, like, you know, it was a concussion type thing, and he just was like, that was it. He'd earned his title shot.
The great what ifs. It's just, one of them.
So.
Yeah, it's a tough one, and it's shit to see, obviously. And the interview we showed earlier with Oscar Willis talking to Dana White, he wished all the best to Anthony and his family. And of course, he has said, and Dustin Poirier has recently said about the UFC reaching out to him, Hunter Campbell, he said in that case. And Dana White has said, you know, we are putting things in place. We have put things in place. And I hope there's more of it. You spoke about the NFL. There's been motion pictures made about the upheaval that the concussion research they did caused in the sport. Like, it completely transformed how the sport is played, how they even train in that sport. So it would be interesting to see if something was like that was brought into MMA. I don't know the ins and outs of that logistically. What would it take to bring something like that forward? But listen, we've been talking about Dana White, and obviously he's buzzing to be in Belgrade. Serbia, it's a big deal. And the natural thing to ask him is, when he takes the stage, Chuck, like, what fights are you looking forward to here, Dana? Let's have a look at how it went.
One more question for Dana. Which fights on this card are you looking forward to the most?
that is a shitty question, my friend.
Yeah, I know.
Listen, obviously, everybody's always excited about the main event. I'm just hoping, you know, I want a few holy shit moments on Saturday night, so hopefully we get a few of those.
Okay, thank you, Dana.
Thank you.
Question.
It's like an automated response. Which is your favorite fight? My favorite fight is main event. You know, like it.
he was looking, the dudes are either side of him, and he couldn't even think of their fucking names.
And it was like,
right there.
I know this guy. What's his name? He has a hyphen in it.
Yeah, definitely.
Ah, I don't remember.
We got the doctor here, I think.
But dude, he's done this in the past too.
Yeah.
There have been times I'm guaranteeing he's like, I'm not even sure who's on the card. I've seen him do this. So this is when you're like, he's checked out. Like, this is what? Because if you go back and watch, you know, video from the boom period in the aughts, right? Like when it was really happening, dude, he could go down the roster and talk to you about all of these guys. You know, Eddie Hearn does that still, right? Like, guys like that, like, they can tell you everything. He could do that too. Like, he paid attention on that level. And unfortunately, that's just not kind of where, and he has a perfect, like, I saw Ben Folks pointing this out. It's like, dude, you get mad when people ask you about scandals going on or, you know, drugs or money or whatever at a press conference. You're like, hey, man, we're here to talk about the fights. Well, so you cue him up, regardless of a shitty question or not, you cue him up to talk about the fights. And he's like, that's a shitty question. And he doesn't talk about the fights. I'm like, well, what are we supposed to be asking him here, you know?
That's kind of what I thought. Like, I was like, well, that's a hard question now. Like, that's essentially, he's reacted to that like he's been, you know, put on the spot about something. Like, you're standing beside the fighters who are competing.
Dude,
this is the first time you've been in Serbia.
This is the first time you've been in Serbia, and this is two guys who, they would not be a main event. right? Yeah. But now they're in a main event. Let's give everybody a little glimpse up to why they're in that main event, right? Like, Medich just never went to the scorecards. This is a dude who's feast or famine. He's going to go in there and go out on a shield. You got D-Rod, who's going to accommodate him the whole way. This dude just got out of the clink. And you know what I mean? Like, it's just these things are like, dude, you could sell the hell out of that fight and say, like, this is going to be fireworks. I don't know why. That's a layup.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In terms of just generating some interest on it, it's just crazy to me, man.
Speaking about generating some interest, you've done a feature with Daniel Rodriguez. I don't know if it's out just yet. It should be out today.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It will be today at some point here.
But such an interesting chat. And as you say, like, such a storied fucking life this guy has had. Like, being in the clink in Tijuana, as you say. And then just, like, the brutality of his answers in this piece. And I don't want to spoil the piece for anyone. But, like, you kind of asked him about preparing for a fight. And he was like, and I was gangbanging, like, but like, what do you think this means to me? Like, this is huge. This is like a luxurious lifestyle compared to the one that I was used to. Like, what did you take away from D-Rod, who's a big underdog here against Uros Medic?
I thought it was a cool, I wanted to talk to him because I'm like, you know, he's going in, he's coming off a ridiculous thing, right? Like, he's in prison for 8 months, I think it was, in Tijuana for what's basically a very minor infraction being made an example of.
Yeah. A little bit of weed, wasn't it?
Be held that long. What's that?
He did a little bit of weed on him, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like, it was like a weed, but I'm like, come on. I mean, so like he stays in there and he's able to, you know, because the jails down there are a little different about what you can get in there versus in America or whatever, something like that. So he's able to like have heavy bag, gloves, mitts, things like that. But he's obviously like, he's at a complete disadvantage. But he was training in there and I kind of knew, like, you know that he's going through this kind of thing. And he's 39 years old. And like, now he's been shipped over to Serbia to fight a Serbian. Like, have you ever watched the videos of Nikola Jokic, like the basketball player, like, and like some of those teams, dude, it's a madhouse. I'm very anxious to see that part of this. Like, what does it look like when they're rooting on their countrymen? This should be a wild scene. But dude, it's a no-win situation in a lot of ways. If he goes in there and wins, that's the biggest spoiler like you can do, right? Like, is to go in there and beat a guy who's finally getting a spotlight in your first main event and you're able to do that. So I think on all those levels, I was like, this is very intriguing. But dude, have you ever talked to him? Because he's like a super down to earth, you know, not sugarcoating anything. Just like, you know, you ask him about title shots. Like, yeah, you know what? No, I'm not really. But you know what? There is a path. You know, there's a path for me to do that. And he's like, he kind of outlines it, which sounds ridiculous. But you're like, hey, you never know. You know, that type of thing. Why not me?
Keep dreaming, buddy. You know what I mean? That's what it's all about.
Keep dreaming.
You've got to be delusional in this game, baby.
And I was trying to point out in the piece, like, he could be like a young 39 in the fight sense, right? Because he got involved so late in the game.
Yeah,
like he didn't even try MMA until 25. I think his first like pro fight was 29, UFC at 33. So like, if you look at all that, you're like, well, you know, he seems a little long in the tooth, but he actually might be a little younger than he seems in terms of cage fighting. So like, he may have still a little run in him, but I think that this one right here is a setup, man. It's going to be a tough one for him to get through this.
Yeah. Medich has just been on such great form. He's kind of becoming the guy everyone thought he would be. He's kind of like, he's putting it together now. Navo Sterling against Jan Błachowicz, that's the co-main event. We talked about at the top of the show. It's a short notice call-up for Navajo. As we saw with the markets earlier on Kalshi, like, he is such a strong favorite. And I'm looking at Jan. Jan's the fucking dude, man. Like, I know he's old.
Why do people sleep on Jan all the time?
He's 43, though, yeah. To your point earlier. He is 43.
I know.
But he's never...
How old is Sterling?
Sterling's like in his 20s, I think. But like, the thing about Jan is he's never fought like with this, say like a McGregor as he ages, and 28 Navajo is. Like, McGregor's reliance on athleticism and speed and all these things that you associate with youth, you've never necessarily looked at Jan Błachowicz and been like,
right,
he needs all of these things to succeed, right? Like, that's the difference for me. Like, he is just...
He was always a plotter.
He's a plotter. You know, it's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah. That is the word I was thinking
exactly.
of.
Yeah, he's always been the kind of the same. I mean, obviously, you slow down. Can you get out of the way of things as much? And I think that's probably where this line comes in. You know, it's like, it should be, like, if everything goes according to what, you know, it's like, this should be the moment where you look at Sterling, okay, here we go. You know, like, if you haven't already, this should be the moment. And yeah, I mean, I think that Błachowicz should be the underdog. I just don't know if it should be that much, you know?
You might have an old trade on that later. You might have a look at that market and trade on it potentially, is all I'm saying, Joe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I will trade on that.
If I had been asked, I'm not saying Dana didn't do a great job answering that question. about what fight I'd be looking forward to, it would be.
It's a shitty question.
It is a shitty question. I'm going to answer it anyway. No problem, guys. Ludovic Klein and Tofik Masoyev, former Ryzen champion. That's going to be a fucking banger. It's a prelim. It's going to be fucking crazy. Please believe me when I tell you that is going to be a great fight. Another one.
Who are you favoring?
Tofik.
Who are you favoring?
Tofik.
Yeah.
His name ends with a V, Chuck. You told me a long time ago. If their name ends with a V, you're going to have to drag me away from not picking them at this stage. And Tofik Masoyev.
What if it's got a V in there, though? I mean, all right.
Yeah, it does, but it's not the end. It's not the criteria we're quite looking for. Another one. Tough one again for Oban Elie in against Michael Oliveira, 9-0 Brazilian. That's also on the prelims. It's going to be a fucking banger. And obviously we have...
You like the card?
I like parts of the card. I think it's very like the all-European cards that they did in the past, where I'd be talking to you guys. I was working for MMA Fighting and we're all working together. Like, yeah, pizza can handle this one because it's very region-specific, right? Like, that's the thing with this. It's completely region-specific.
I think it's going to deliver, though. And that crowd's going to be wild, I think. So I think it'll be a fun one in the end.
Yeah, yeah. We also have, as we said, the PFL New York card, Usman Nurmagomedov against Archie Colgan. Undefeated Archie Colgan, undefeated Usman Nurmagomedov. Dakota Dicheva against Denise Kehals, who I said earlier. Let me just make sure I'm sure about this, because I don't like to say things about the great Sinead Kavanaugh unless they are true. I was wrong. Oh my God, who am I confusing this with? Oh my God, I was completely wrong. 3-fight winning streak for Kehals. We have not seen Dakota Dicheva, who was an outrageous favorite in this fight, as we saw with the calcium markets earlier on, 95% or something like that, picking her. 4-fight winning streak coming into it for Denise, but I just don't think it's going to be enough. It's a showcase night for Dakota Dicheva again.
Showcase.
Yeah.
And Kimball, like, she's a kickboxer, right? And I feel like, okay, so you're going to go against a person who's also a very, very good kickboxer. You're going to play in that wheelhouse. That's not a good setup.
It's not going to go well. You know? It's not going to go well.
No.
Think of it like McGregor v. Seaver back in the day. We all know what's going to happen. Let's just enjoy how it's going to take place.
That's right.
But yeah, I'll be on the live blog duty for Uncrowned tonight. That's my last bit of action before I take a 2-week vacation. Very, very
much. So wait, we're off next week.
Next week.
And then the following week as well.
That's right. Yeah.
All right.
I need time to relax, Chuck. I need to, you know, get my curl game together.
Amalfi Coast, or where are you heading this time? Like,
no, we're staying in Ireland. Staying in Ireland this time. You know what I mean? Showing the Irish coast some love, perhaps.
All right.
But yeah, look, you tell me now. I should have probably brought this up at the start, but people will notice that Chuck Mendenhall is not in his usual location here. Chuck, tell us, where are you
and what are you doing? This is my bedroom.
Did you just do it? No. You just did the whole place up? You just did some renovations?
Just did it differently now. Oh. Yeah, this is just renovated. No, I'm in Minneapolis. I'm with my kids and they wanted to go to the WWE SummerSlam, which is happening out here. And so here I am. I'm going to go to a big wrestling event. We'll see how it goes, man. I know Brock Lesnar's on the card. And I think Roman Reigns is on the card.
Oh, shit.
There's a couple of others. So
is it 2 days?
It's a 2-day thing. Yeah, this is like WrestleMania, I guess. I mean, it's a big deal. Good thing is, like, the, you know, I do know like people in the wrestling community, so you get a chance. Like, you never cross paths with them unless you're at something like this. So like, I get a chance to like see some people that normally you wouldn't. Corey Graves, who's you know, one of the commentators, used to be my neighbor out in Connecticut, so I'll get a chance to see him for the first time in years, you know.
Shit.
Which is kind of fun.
How do you fucking know everyone, Chuck? Like, this is just a thing I always tell you about everyone about you. I'm just like, he just knows fucking everybody. I don't know how it is. That's crazy. A WWE commentator was your neighbor. Come on.
The key is, like, you just didn't know about it, right? Like, because I don't go on to social media and talk about it. Other people. I'm not going to name names, you know, but I'm like, yeah, you just kind of know people, you know?
It's cool. I'd be.
By the way, did you see Ben Folks wearing a little, water shoes on like some kind of raft with his light beers? I mean, come on.
Light beers and water shoes. What type of image are we trying to portray here? You know what I mean? It's absolutely.
It's one thing to be a nature guy, but water shoes?
Come on.
Come on now.
Do you know his dog really pisses me off how great of a dog he is? Like, he's walking across this log, like, as if it's nothing.
I saw that.
If I put my dog on a log, he would start screaming. Like, he'd be like, ah, what the fuck? Like, he doesn't know how
to. As he falls into the water.
He just fucking, he can't do anything. We have the cat next door, Jasper, and him. Between them, they don't know what animals they are. They don't know what they're meant to do. They're just the cat that can't cat and a dog that can't dog.
Yeah.
They should have a buddy cop movie, but they fucking hate each other. They hate everything about each other, and they want to present like they're going to fight to the death when they see each other, but they're also too afraid to do that because they know they're probably bad at that as well. So
cowards.
They are fucking cowards. You're definitely.
Keeps you entertained, Big PC. That's what's important.
That's what it is, and I'll be very entertained watching the PFL tonight and hope. Is it Saturday and Sunday for SummerSlam?
Yes, it is, yeah. Saturday and Sunday. So
I might dabble. I might dabble a bit with that.
Dabble in it. Yeah. Check it out, man.
Prince was from Minneapolis, wasn't he?
He is. And you know, it's funny. So is Bob Dylan. Like, it's from this area. So like, so like there's murals, like right where I'm at downtown here, there's a huge murals of Bob Dylan, which is very cool. And then the First Avenue, what is it called? Like 7th Street, whichever it's called, like the First Avenue is like a venue that Prince used to play. That's right down the road here too.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they got some history out here.
Holy shit. That is incredible. Yeah. I wish I was out there having a few cold ones, which is the weather nice there? Because when I think of Minneapolis, I think of snow.
Dude, I went to a ball game yesterday. It was high 80s. It was very hot. But I think that's kind of unusual. Like right now, it's all rainy. It looks like Ireland or something. They're very gray and depressing out there. But I think it's supposed to like kind of, you know, be in the low 80s this weekend. So it's not, I mean, it's summer. It feels nice, but it gets super cold here in the winter, man. It's like, we're far enough north where it's, you know, it's like it hovers around 0 degrees for long periods of time.
Yeah, man. Well, look, I hope you have a great time. Enjoy SummerSlam. Before we go, do we have any super chats, Andy? Oh shit.
Oh yeah.
Super chats. Pierce O'Leary turning up on a horse to press conference. Love it, Petey. How far can this young man go? I am all in. Pierce O'Leary, he is fighting tomorrow at the 3 Arena. We've actually got a bit of a boxing. I know I was telling you and Ben about this before. There's a bit of a golden era of boxing happening again in Ireland. And Katie Taylor obviously fighting in Croke Park in September. You have Pierce O'Leary this weekend. I think next weekend or the weekend after, it's Zuffa Boxing at 3 Arena. So huge time. I was at Pierce's last fight and the atmosphere was absolutely incredible. I think he's fighting Chamberlain tonight, tomorrow night even. So very much looking forward to it. And more than anything, I think it's great how Pierce is making people feel about boxing. Like, he is a real hero in the Northerner city. He's a guy people can get behind. He seems like every person, every boxing media member I've spoke to has had nothing but good things to say about Big Bang. So hopefully he will do the business because it's creating a great atmosphere for the sport here. One thing I wonder is, can MMA and boxing be popular at the same time in Ireland? I don't think they can, because MMA's having a bit of a lull. We have Ian Garry about to fight for a world title. There's barely a word about it. And meanwhile, boxing is taking off again and will probably be the center of the fights world when Katie Taylor takes on, when she fights at Croke Park, should I say. Yeah. So very interesting.
I will say that Brazil is buzzing for the Garry fight, so that's good. At least we got one sector.
I'm glad they are. He's definitely stimulated interest in that part of the world. I'll tell you that one. Anything else, Andy? Life lessons combat sports for $5. Have you considered interviewing Nico Ali Walsh given the recent revival developments? General thoughts on the situation. Great show, everyone. Well, interesting enough, he was on Ariel's show earlier in the week, and like you,
right.
I probably was with you in terms of what the fuck is going on here. This does not look good. They've got to him. They're going to pay this man for his silence. I feel a very different way after hearing him being interviewed by Ariel. So go and check that out. It's up on this very page you're watching this on. So go ahead and check that out if you haven't seen it yet. He speaks very well. And he is a hugely important piece of this jigsaw. And I feel better about the pretenses of his meeting with Nick Khan and his appearance on the Zuffa broadcast after he spoke to Ariel. So maybe you'll feel the same way. Go and check it out. Is that all we got, Andy? That was it. Well, listen, guys. What am I going to do without the crack for 2 weeks? I don't know. But I'll find out. I'll tell you that much. Don't forget to join me on the live blog for PFL. I know everybody's buzzing for Dakota and Usman. I am too. I cannot wait. But for me, Chuck, Andy, Oscar, Jordan, who's not here, and Ben, who's not here, we love you so much. Don't be fiending too badly over the next 2 weeks. We'll be back. Hopefully the full team collective will be back as well. We don't know. Ben is gallivanting ways.
Kind of quiet with just us. I like it.
Yeah, so, man. Maybe this is the new look of the show. Who knows?
I think that's what.
Let us know in the comments. What are you messing? We love yous loads. Have a wonderful time away. Stay locked in on all the fights. Serbia tomorrow, New York tonight. We love yous very much. SummerSlam, Pierce O'Leary, everything. It's all going down. See you soon. Mwah.